Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Hey, good evening, ladies and gentlemen and friends everywhere. We're glad you tuned in tonight. This is Raising Expectations tonight, every Monday night. And we count it a privilege and an honor to have you with us each week. And thanks for the information you send to us and the questions that you ask and the ideas that you have. And thanks for letting us know that the name of this show seems to be working, because you do let us know that you have your expectations raised, and that's the thing that's most important to us. We're all men of faith. We believe in what the Bible says. We believe Jesus is the Son of God. We believe he works in our lives, and we know who we are when we accept the gift of salvation, and right along with that, we know that he works with us every single day. It's great to know that we have him with us each day, wherever we go, whatever we face, and whoever we may be dealing with. So tonight, we've got a very, very special program again for you. Once again, and we're going to introduce the folks again as we do each week, because you ask each week. So I'm going to go ahead and do that, and then we're going to introduce our special guest tonight and just have a wonderful over a cup of coffee or a Coke or whatever it might be, depending on what part of the country you're in right now, or if you're listening to us all the way from Uganda, whatever that might be, your time of night there is a lot different, or early morning. So we're glad you are with us tonight. So we're going to begin on the West Coast with Dr. Paul Hall, who comes with us. As we know, Dr. Paul comes from Southern California and Lompoc, California. And Dr. Paul is a retired pastor. He's a theologian. He's a Bible professor. And he's just one great guy. Known him for over 50 years. And this guy's like a brother. And people love him wherever he is. So we're sure glad that he's with us here tonight. And we're not having an earthquake. I'm just moving this thing on the table. That's what's fun about these things. They move around. It looks like you're in an earthquake. But anyway, Paul is in Southern California, Lompoc, north of Santa Barbara. Now, we're a rocket town where all the rockets are fired. And Paul is known for the way he gives great insight, biblical insight, and reaches out to help people in times of questions. So Paul is there. And if we move all the way to the East Coast, which is actually the south part of the East Coast, we're going to be in Georgia, Dalton, Georgia. We're going to find right there Steph Thayer, Dr. Craig Thayer, her husband, and Steph Thayer. Steph is right here, but we hope to catch Craig in a little bit here. And Steph is the CEO and founder of Quenching Well. She's a, as you may know, a health and wellness coach and a women's Bible study leader. She has people that she helps with health and wellness literally all over the nation. I think she can help you more in the areas of health and knowing what to eat and why to eat that and how to take care of your body than you're going to find anywhere. She's just the best. And there's just literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that she deals with. And they really look forward to the time that she has. You can catch her again every morning on our website. You can find her website, and you can on Facebook and other things, you can find things that she writes in response to people and in dealing with their health and how good it comes out in their lives. So we're going to be there, and Dr. Craig should be with us here in just a bit, and he's known as Tank. In fact, there he is. There's Craig right now.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Well, he just literally dropped in. That's great, Craig. Craig is a trauma surgeon. Yeah, he made it. He's a trauma surgeon. He is an author. His new book is out and doing well, called Save. We'll show you that a little later on our website. You get a look at it. But Craig is... he's a trauma surgeon. Like I say every time, I just can't get over it. When somebody needs to figure out what to do with somebody, they go to Craig and say, we're not sure what to do. And he's a trauma surgeon. He tells them, I think we need to do this. And he prays over every decision before he does it. Craig is a guy. He's also a great coach. He's a great, he's a water polo coach, and we call him Tank because at 6 foot five or six, we'll call him anything he likes, and that's the way we go with that. So just love you guys. I'm so glad you're there, and we've got moving back across the United States to Central America, right, Tank? We call it that. The great state of Texas, we find there Pastor Ron Greer, one of our favorite pastors there in the state of Texas. And that's it. Ron also ran for political office years ago. He's done a little of everything. He's one of the, right? He was on the right party, don't worry. But in any event, Ron is one of those guys who works with men today. He works with a group out of Florida called Man in the Mirror, who helps counsel men in problems and situations in life. They go to him. He gives biblical principles and answers. And more than that, he's there for them to walk a road with them. And they know that they can get to Ron with anything they need. Ron's one of those great all-around guys that loves God, loves people. And he's a brother in Christ. We just love and appreciate him. So this is, I consider it one of the greatest teams you could imagine. I've been a pastor over... I was a pastor over 50-something years, way back, about the time they were running around Mount Sinai. But in any event, looking back, this group of people right here are the finest group of people of any church that I ever pastored. And I look back and thank God for each one of them. So as they share tonight, I know there'll be things that they'll probably have you thinking about, too. And I'm just thankful that they're here. So we're going to share our guests with you now. We're excited to have with us, actually from Southern California, we have with us somebody who's going to automatically ring a bell for you, Kurt Schlichter. By the way, Kurt, we'll bring you up here in just a moment. Our special guest a week ago, Jim Robbins from the World Institute of Politics in Washington, D.C., said to say a special hi to you. And someday we'll get you guys together. It would really be fun to have the two of you speaking together. We shared that Kurt would be with us. You've seen him on Newsmax, on Fox News. He is an editor, a senior columnist for Town Hall magazine. He's a Los Angeles trial lawyer. He's a retired Army infantry colonel. He's renowned as a major Twitter activist, at Kurt Schlichter. You'll find me. He's got over 350,000 or 400,000 people that follow him on there, and probably a lot more now that we have a new person running Twitter, but we'll get more of that information from him. His new book that we know, he's written a lot of books. In fact, he has a series out, and we kind of look at him somewhat like the new Tom Clancy. It's really exciting. But a book he brought out, he did a really play on titles there, where he simply said, The Fall and Rise of America. We're going to be talking about some of those things. We're going to let him just share with us tonight. And he's with one of our favorite friends there, as you know, that you see all the time, from Arkansas, and in that picture, and Mike Huckabee, great guy and a great leader. And he was with him. I'm sure he could tell us some stories there. So we're going to welcome at this time with the great welcome that we go, the round of applause. And TJ, if you'll bring Kurt on. Kurt, welcome to Raising Expectations. We'll bring you into a round of applause. That's probably the greatest entrance you've ever had. Almost as good as seeing you. Quite.
Overwhelming.
Well, thank you, Joe. I think we have to address the elephant in the room with Paul. Is that a cavalry saber?
It is. It's an NCO saber that was presented to me. I wish I'd been the one wielding it, but I had a group of Marines in my church, and they gave that to me for my birthday. And I was really honored, really honored. Yeah.
My cavalry saber is over my mantle. It's about the, I think I may have two military things in my whole house, but my troops gave it to me when I left squadron command.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, it's kind of cool. Not to be a stickler about it, but it's a Marine Corps saber, not a cavalry.
Well, look, the Marine Corps is an important support element of the Navy, which is in terms of important support element delivering the decisive combat force, which is the ground force of the United States Army, to any theater anywhere. The United States Army, which conducted more amphibious landings in World War II than any other element. But look, I'm not going to run down the Marines. They are a nice addition to the main effort.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Now we got that one.
You're looking at a former Marine. I guess always a Marine, huh, Ron?
Yeah, that's good.
That's good, Ron.
my second company commands, my first sergeant was a former Marine. Needless to say, it was the best. I think there are 130 companies in California. It was a guard unit. Mine was number one out of 130. I'm not saying this because I had a Marine NCO working side by side with me, but
it helped.
Standards are standards.
Yeah, I don't detect any competitiveness here at all.
None. Yeah. Well, Kurt, had you ever given that speech before, or was that just kind of impromptu? That was pretty good.
You know, I never give the same speech twice. I was speaking in Texas, Allen, Texas, about 2 weeks ago. And right a bunch door. Of Republicans. Oh, really? Interesting.
Right next
the
door.
Fulton Corridor Republican Women.
Yeah.
And it was a great group. And I was very impressed on a number of things. And let me tell you one, because I think it's significant. There were about 200 people there. I was there with my friend Jim Pickle, who's another lawyer, helps me with some cases in Texas. And I came out speak there for his group. And they started out having anybody who's running for office or in office. And like half the people are running for office. I'm like, oh, I'm the second constable. I'm like the council member. And I'm like, wow, this is America, because it's like normal people. And they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go be a councilman for my town. It's not like, well, in LA, if you're a councilman, you make more than a congressman. Right? But these are people who just go, oh, well, you know, it's my job to, you know, I'm an American citizen. I need to be. And there's like 40 people. Place is like an office. I'm like going, whoa. It was invigorating. But getting back to Paul's point, I don't have a speech because I can't. Because I always talk about current events and it always changes. Now, I am a stand-up comic, so I do have bits. You know, like you'll have Jerry Seinfeld and go, what's the deal with airline food? And he's got like 10 minutes on airline food, right? I got some bits that I can punch in if I need to. For instance, I always end up talking about some of our young soldiers. I have several stories that illustrate how incredible they are and what an honor it was to lead them. And that's usually the same. But no, to answer your question, I never do the same speech twice because I can't, because every day is different. I mean, today you have Fulton County like accidentally releasing indictments before the grand jury. I'm like,
accidentally.
Well, look, I always attribute to incompetence over cunning when it comes to the government.
Yeah. And especially in Fulton County.
I mean, my God. And
it's a third world
looking
country.
At them and I'm, you know, and I want to clarify one thing. You guys may say, well, Kurt is a lawyer. He has a legal background. What is your legal opinion of these things? These aren't legal cases.
No.
Right? I mean, it'd be like, you know, it'd be like going to, you know, Tank the Surgeon and going, what's your opinion on voodoo? I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, magic potions to make somebody well. It has nothing to do with what I do.
Yeah.
Because they're purely political acts and they're horribly destructive of our culture.
Yeah.
Because they're ridiculous. I mean, as a lawyer, I'm looking at it going, this is a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke. It's just not funny.
Well, let me ask a question along that line, because I have a very conspiratorial mind.
That's always a mistake. Although
I've been right a number of times.
My opinion is bad people are generally too stupid to maintain a conspiracy. I mean, they're just bad people.
There you go.
They're idiots. They're bad people.
Well, you know, I traveled around the country and, you know, talked to a lot of people, and especially, you know, the 30 to 45 year olds. Now, the thing that concerns me, I think, most of all, is that the ones who are everyday common, well, not common, but level headed working folk concerned about their jobs, their family, blah, blah, blah. They're disconnecting. All the crap and all the news, they just disconnect. But then if you talk to the left-wing socialist, you know, college student twisted mind, they are just passionate about the radical agenda taking place, and everybody's disconnecting. So my question is the chaos that constantly bombarded, you think that's intended to cause people to kind of shy away, or
Well, no, I think the left, it is a side effect. Mm. Remember, look, you got everybody in there. Everybody has a place inside themselves that's empty. And, you know, the six of us here try and fill it up with Jesus. Mm. Okay. I mean, I'm probably the most inept Christian on earth, but I give it a, leftists don't. So they've got this void inside. They got to fill up with something.
That's right.
And it's almost like a weird pagan religion, you know, worshiping the climate, you know, the scary climate monster is going to get them. Yeah, I mean, I've got to find my moral backing in creating a villain out of other people, which is, and remember, leftism is pretty much the exact opposite of Christianity. Yeah, in fact, I don't want to get theological, but the thing is, with Christians, you try and make better people. Mm-hmm. With leftism, you pretend to make better people to increase your own personal power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it's a very different mindset.
Right. Right.
And, you know, way too many people grow up without anything to fill it up, and they fill it up with, you know, pronoun idiocy, these weird things that try and give their life meaning. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of it's just embarrassingly dumb. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, you feel bad for them, A, because they don't say the truth, mm-hmm. but also, you know, I don't like to see people in a place where they lose their dignity by giving over their humanity to something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something wrong and evil and dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I make fun of people in the political field, but I don't like to see someone humiliated. And I don't think normal people do. It makes me feel bad for them. And I look at these people, and you look at the idiots who went and like tried to shout down, you know, Ron DeSantis.
Right. Yeah,
you remember they had this horrible blue hair. They've taken, you know, the beautiful bodies that God gave them, and then, you know, this blue hair that is a transgression. It's actually an act of rebellion against normalcy. They're not in particularly good shape. And I was at the gym this morning. I tried. But they grasp ugliness. They grasp things that cause division with others.
Yes.
And they have this kind of, I keep thinking of do you guys know a lot of preachers who are like John Lithgow and Footloose? Remember him? I know a lot of leftists who are exactly like that. You know, a lot of the preachers I know, I'm like, you could use a little more Lithgow, guy. You're looking at the sock. But that's not what the lie is, that we're the lunatics out there trying to shove things down their throat. But what they don't realize, because they don't care enough to even pretend to study what we think, I can't force Jesus on someone.
Right.
How am I going to do that? Right.
No.
Well, first of all, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to have some explaining to do, and I don't want to explain that. But it wouldn't work.
Right.
Because but for them, mm-hmm. look at all their efforts to force conformity.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, I mean, you know, they're the Puritans.
Yes.
They're the people who would put you in stocks because you didn't come to their climate gathering.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right. You know, I don't want to get too, you know, you know, I'm just, you know, this just strikes me as something that's just glaringly obvious, that a lot of these people are empty inside and looking for something. And, you know, some people find alcohol. Mm-hmm. Some people find gender weirdness. And, you know, some people find, an immoral lifestyle and they think it makes them feel better. But have you ever known anybody who's truly happy as an alcoholic truly happy living a immoral lifestyle?
Yeah. Right,
or truly happy as a leftist? Name a happy leftist. Name one. I'd like to know. Statistically, there's got to be one who's like, yeah, I'm pretty happy. My pronouns are happy.
Exactly, my pronouns.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I find it sad, but also very dangerous.
I guess the other part of my deep sense of angst is they have these insane ideas because they're disconnected from reality, and yes. I was disconnected and. Not even disconnect. They're opposed to anything that is biblically centered. Anything that is God is completely opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
And
because God won't conform to them.
Right.
Exactly.
And if you love God, you're not going to worship government. You're not going to worship the climate.
Climate change.
Mysteries or whatever they are.
Right.
And they get angry.
Yes.
Look, I don't get angry when somebody doesn't believe the way I do. Right. I get a little sad.
Yes.
You know, I think everybody should believe how I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't believe it. You know, reminds me of a story here in Los Angeles. We were at a Methodist church for the last time ever. And they were having confirmation classes. And we were at a meeting talking about it. They said, well, we're taking the kids to a mosque. And I said, look, I like Muslims. I defended them in Kosovo. But, you know, this is a confirmation class. Shouldn't we nail down the whole Jesus thing? You know, get that, check that box first. And they were like, well, you know, last time, we two of our students chose not to become Christians. And I'm like, and my wife's like, you know, that's not good, right? They didn't know that. One lady's there, and there's a minister sitting right there, and you know she's one of those ministers, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And she says nothing. And somebody goes, well, how can I tell my child what's right and wrong? You know, who what to believe? And I'm like, what would help if you believed it?
Yes.
If you can't have the courage of your own convictions, I mean, literally. Exactly. And I think that's one of the problems in our society where people don't, you know, look, because I am a Christian does not mean I hate or act like a jerk to Muslims, Jews, Hindus, or anyone else.
Right.
It also means that I am not a Muslim, Jew, Hindu, or anything else.
Absolutely.
I treat them like bad people. And if they go, well, Kurt, what do you believe? Well, I believe this, this, and this. And I think you should too. They'll say, well, Kurt, I think you should believe this. All right. I'm not going to hurt you. Right. Leftists will hurt me.
Yes. Yes. Hurt you. Cancel you.
Yes.
Cancel. Yes. That's a key word. Yeah.
Oh.
I can attest to that. They literally want to hurt you. And this has been 30 some odd years ago. We had death threats. We had police escorts. They had private security folks who wanted to guard our house. Had warnings at school from my wife and kids, simply because I disagree with them.
Yeah,
people think that's an exaggeration when you say that, but they really. I mean, you look at anywhere in history where you have the same sort of mentality, and it's always this horrible destructiveness. You know, you look at 100 million people dead because they would not conform to the same sort of So yeah,
it's
not hyperbole.
Does anyone here lack lack confidence in what they believe to such an extent that they have to get a gun and stick it to somebody's head to reassure themselves by forcing someone else to mouth words that they're right?
Exactly.
I'm not going to defend other people in my faith and I've defended people of other faiths too. Yeah. I don't think you should go murder somebody. because they're not like you. That's a bad thing.
Yes.
These people do.
Yes. Yes.
If you believe the scripture and what God says in the scripture, like you're both saying, Well, then, my goodness, does he have the power to do what he says he will do to who and within whom he wants that to happen? Yeah. So I don't need to worry about that. I need to love him, but be firm. And like you're saying, I don't need to make him do something. God will. And I have the right to have him where I am. He's going to open their hearts where he wants it. It's up to them. They make the decision. He doesn't.
But that's the thing. I mean, we're all Protestants here, you know. Yeah. It's a very individualized version of Christianity, which, people are like, Kurt, maybe you should become a Catholic. I have very good Catholic friends. Maybe Kurt, you should become a Catholic.
Me too.
But that's not how I'm called.
Yeah.
And I will rely on my friends to do what they are called to do.
Yeah. And when it comes to that word reverence, so many wonderful Catholic people that I know, they sure have a love in their heart for God. Sometimes I think maybe they don't know the word as much, and they sure just excite them even more. But I tell you what, they sure love the Lord, the ones that I know, and they're thankful. And you know that old argument, Ron and I, we were talking about that once. Paul, we said it too, about the cross and the crucifix. Okay, let's look at it for a second, not to take a religious bent here, but just one thought. You got a cross. Our cross is empty. Why do we say it as Protestants? Because we say Christ is off the cross. We know he's out of the tomb. We know where he is. He's coming again. Amen. If they have him on the cross, I had a friend say to me once, Joe, we love to see him there because we're reminded of what he did for me. And I love that he died for my sins. I'm not going to argue with that. They know where he is. If they see him up there and that reminds them that he loved them and died for them, hey, I'm with you. I mean, you know, God figured that.
I'm not going to presume to tell him
how
to run things.
Exactly. Anyway, sorry.
And unfortunately, that's what leftists do.
Yeah.
Right.
There is I think a lot of leftism is a rebellion against God. And I think, frankly, there are some people who in the Christian community who have not behaved well and given some of these people an incentive to go off the path. There are a lot of leftists out there who had bad experiences with people calling themselves Christian. And
didn't help.
That does not help. And that's right. Bad.
That didn't help.
So it's Jesus talk today with Kurt Schlichter. Who would have thought that?
I love it.
My wife's over there going, just shaking her head.
Well, on another subject then, tell me your opinion about Ron DeSantis, how if he's got a shot in the dark or not.
I'm a big supporter of Ron DeSantis because I think he's a great guy. I also like Donald Trump, who is an imperfect human being. And Ron DeSantis is an imperfect human being. Only my wife is perfect.
There you go.
Wrong. Points. You got points.
Hey,
look, I think Ron DeSantis has a track record of achievement. I think he will appeal to voters. Donald Trump has a lot of great achievements. I think he was a generally good president. But 53% or so of people just hate him and will never vote for him, including a lot of conservatives who, you know, I can take some of his rougher edges. You know, I was in the infantry. but other people can't. And that's not for me. I can't hand wave that away because maybe I don't think it's rational because my goal is to beat the Democrats. But I think that's true. Trump has a lot of loyalty from people. I think they appreciate what he did. I think they think he speaks for them in a way no one else has. I think they're right to feel that way. He was a very necessary change agent, even when he drove me crazy doing some things that I didn't appreciate. But I don't think he wins in 2024. Will he win the nomination? Well, he's got about half the votes now as the ex-president, which I do not consider particularly great. I mean, you've got this desiccated husk in the White House. He's got like 75%. There are a lot of Republicans out there looking for other options.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, you know, a lot of them are rallying to Donald Trump because of these outrageous criminal charges that are just garbage. I mean, they're a joke. Again, a joke that's not funny. And I understand people rallying around him. I don't think people 5 months out are really looking yet.
Yeah.
I think the debate will be the first time people really pay attention. And I'm just writing an article that says, you know, Donald Trump shouldn't debate. If I was advising him, I'd say, don't debate. You're ahead.
I wouldn't.
You do it.
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't do it. You're hiring me to get you to win. Don't debate. You have nothing to gain.
Yeah.
Donald Trump does not think like I think. Donald Trump is not coldly, ruthlessly strategic like I am as a lawyer and an army officer. He's Donald Trump. He's going to do whatever Donald Trump damn well wants to do.
Exactly.
The thing is, I think DeSantis, he's clearly in second. I don't buy that he's in third. I think he's around 20%. I think if you look on social media, you're going to see a lot of activists talking. I think about among normal people, there's a lot more openness to DeSantis. Remember, Trump was down below DeSantis. He was like 25, 30% just 6 months ago. So it's not like these, you know, it's not like these folks are necessarily locked in. Trump, you know, Trump's got money problems because he's spending a lot of it on his legal fees. And I think a lot of people aren't going to donate because they didn't realize they were paying for his legal fees. I mean, if I'm donating to Trump, I'm thinking, wait a minute, he's a billionaire. I'm paying his legal fees?
Right.
I don't think so. But sell a hotel, buddy. But, you know, I think DeSantis has to stay in. If DeSantis stays alive and continues doing what he's doing, building a ground game, making connections, making his presence known in Iowa, he has a chance to win in Iowa. If he wins in Iowa, that has the potential for starting the domino effect of other people going, all right, now we got to get serious. And I think as the primaries come up, people are going to go, you know, I like Donald Trump. I'm glad he did what he did. He is being treated shabbily, horribly. But I don't think he's going to win. I want to get the guy who's going to win, a guy who will almost certainly pardon him on the federal claims. Look, I think Ron DeSantis can win, but Ron DeSantis has to go out and win it himself if he wants it.
Right.
And same with Trump. There's no, you know, this stuff about everybody should drop out and back me.
No, it's not going to happen.
No, we don't do coronations in America. Okay. There's no Lady Di. All right. You're not Prince, whoever that goober is. Well, maybe it's definitely is. But look, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think there's anybody besides Trump or DeSantis. But, you know, I thought Trump was going to lose last time in 2016. Well, not last time. In 2016, I thought Trump was going to lose.
Yeah.
And he's proceeded to lose the midterms in 18. He lost the election in 2020. And I was a lawyer doing legal stuff. So I understand the fraud and other legal issues there. And I do consider it a rigged election in the sense that it was fundamentally unfair, even if Joe Biden did get more votes. But I, you know, Joe Biden's sitting in the White House, and that's my task of winning is who wins. You know, who's sitting in the White House? Who's sitting in the White House? And then 2022 was just a disaster. You look at the guys. You look at candidates who were controversial, like Carrie Lake. Who I've met personally, a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And I think she made terrible choices while running. I mean, you don't go and say, if you vote for McCain, don't vote for me. You know you're in Arizona,
in Arizona.
Right, yeah, McCain.
Okay, Blake Masters, I spoke at a fundraiser for him. I like him. I think he would have been a great guy. He didn't get done. Adam Laxalt is very good. Adam Laxalt in Nevada was proof that you can be a really good candidate.
And still not.
It's the loops.
Yes.
Bad candidates win too. Hi, Lindsey Graham.
I can attest to that too.
Yeah. There you go.
So, Herschel Walker, who I think really would have brought a lot to the Senate, he lost because the people in Georgia didn't want him. Dr. Oz, who I think had some interesting perspective. I had a chance to talk to him. Very intelligent guy.
Yeah,
certainly, better than Mr. Fetterman, who is, frankly, a mess. And I, you know, I don't think it says much about his family that they're putting him through that. Same with Dianne Feinstein.
Exactly.
And to some extent, Mitch McConnell, who's clearly suffered a stroke. I'm not the surgeon. I'm just the guy.
Thumbs up on that.
When people are drooling on themselves and their faces drooping and they can't move an arm, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, yes. I think the gerontocracy issue and the partisanship's so great that I would literally vote for a guy like Mitch McConnell, who is functionally incapable of doing his job, simply to make sure I had the vote. And the Democrats are doing it. I get it. I'm not going to run them down because I do the same damn thing. I just don't know if I'd let one of my family members be the object of the exercise.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. I won't hog. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to nothing, but I'll wait.
No, that's good. There's a lot on that election. We did
have one. What do you think
of Vivek? What was that?
What do I think of Vivek?
Yeah.
Well, I've said before, and I'll say it again, I'm not sure I want a president who first heard Nirvana on a classic rock station. Okay.
Uh-oh, you got to explain that one.
He's 35, okay? He is, you know, yes, he meets the requirements for age for being a president. I think he's too young, too inexperienced. He's been an entrepreneur. Look, I think he has a lot. Sharp guy, very smart. I think he has a lot to offer. I think we'll be hearing from him again. His especially on the foreign policy side, hopeless. You know, Hugh Hewitt asked him, "What's the nuclear triad?" Which, of course, is land-based, air-delivered, seaborne nuclear weapons. Pretty basic if you're the president who actually launches the nuclear weapons. I mean, not a lot of guys are as familiar with nuclear targeting. You know, I didn't, but I kind of hope the president is, and he has an opinion about whether we put our resources into submarines or new missiles or B-21 Raiders. These are important issues. This is a guy who's never served in the military, never been around it. What's he going to do when the generals come to him? Is he going to have the confidence to say no? Because Trump didn't. Trump was impressed by guys with medals. Ron DeSantis, he was at lots of briefings with lots of generals, and he knows when, you know, someone's a good general and someone's a bad general. And I think he understands the chain of command because generals will lean on you and they'll do that. You know, they've got, you know, fruit salad and everything. Yeah. Listen to me. Look, I got this. You got to be able to do what Winston Churchill said. And Winston Churchill, of course, fought in the Boer War, commanded a infantry battalion in World War I, Lord of the Admiralty. He would go, "Stop it, General. You're going to do X, Y, and Z." Because the president's commander in chief, and he's got to be able to say no. And the military's been ran roughshod over Trump, and it's completely ineffective right now. It is a disaster. I am, of all the things I'm worried about, the state of our military and its vulnerability to the Chinese, because the Chinese are serious.
They are.
Yeah, that was the question somebody called, wanted to find out about the supposed readiness or lack thereof, and in the South Pacific, and even the Aleutian Islands. What's going on with Russia and China up there?
Well, first of all, we have 280 surface ships. The Chinese have built over 400.
Right.
Cool.
So they now have the biggest navy in the world where we used to. Now ours are conformed a little differently. We have, you know, carriers, super carriers. They have diesel carriers. Or fuel or oil carriers. We have been living in the Pacific on the legacy of World War II, where we conducted massive operations over the entire Western Pacific, and that became who we were as American military, American Navy. And that powerful tradition was a combat multiple. We had the biggest military, but we knew how to use it.
Right.
Do the Chinese, do we still? Well, we've been running ships into other ships. Mm. You know, are we focusing on a DEI training, or are we focusing on, you know, how to employ a carrier battle group against the Chinese, especially considering the limitations on range of some of our fighter aircraft? Because I'm not sure we have the right. I'm not sure we did the thinking that we needed to do to get the right mix of equipment. And the Chinese, of course, asymmetrically exploit our vulnerabilities, particularly by intermediate range ballistic missiles, which can reach out and touch us long before we get close enough to let our F-35s hit them.
Right.
So I look back in history, the Carthaginians were, of course, the premier sea power of the Mediterranean, and the Romans had no navy.
Right.
And Carthaginians were just pummeling the Romans until one of their ships washed up on the beach. Romans copied it and learned how to have a navy very quickly and actually beat the Carthaginians.
Right.
So, you know, are we going to sit and glide on our past glory and just assume the Chinese aren't smart enough to figure out how to employ a massive, massive armada? I won't take that bet.
Not good. Not good.
Well, one of the disturbing videos that I saw was which I was actually surprised at a group I meet with. So the Chinese have produced two sort of videos of their Navy's capabilities and size, and they actually took the video and showed it publicly, which I've never heard of before with Chinese. And number two, the second video,
information op.
You have a Chinese fighter pilot who filmed himself flying over a U.S. combat ship twice, and films the thing, and you show it on television, and then you show it worldwide. That's just a number of things like that the Chinese have been doing that says that the things that have been unthought of, and when I was in the military, and all of a sudden
you're allowed to fly over. You know, we're not going to shoot you down if you fly over us and you're not doing some hostile. Normal people don't know that. They see, oh my gosh, we're disrespecting America, which of course is what it's meant to do. Yeah. Now we do some of that too. We will send our stuff through our ships through the channel between Taiwan and the mainland to emphasize this is international waters. We're executing our right of passage. So that's something we do too. I'm not arguing it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that we use information operations too. I'm just not sure we can back up our information operations like we used to. I mean, people, look, I was there at the time and place of America's greatest power. I was at 7 Corps main headquarters in Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. We had just annihilated the Republican Guard. When I say annihilated, I mean there were 36 divisions when we started, and there were none combat ready 100 hours later. Right. It was, and this isn't just, you know, a little battlefield like Kanai or Alesia or one of those. This is over the entire south of Iraq. Right. We just wiped them out. Right. And the entire world was completely stunned. Right. But keep in mind, these were the guys who trained to fight the Russians.
Right.
And we were, you know, we were the most powerful combat force ever assembled, and we just destroyed, and the whole world was just like stunned, and that was the pinnacle of American power. I was there at 7 Corps headquarters when that happened, and I didn't realize that till years later when I was like, holy cow, I was there. We've gone downhill from then. We thought history had ended. We won. No one could beat us. But you know, it's like baseball. There's always another season. You're the champs this year. Maybe you'll be champs next year. Maybe you'll have, like, you know, the Celtics for 5 or 6 years or whatever during the 60s. But maybe, you know, I forget who it was. The 76ers went and beat. I forget who it was. Wilt Chamberlain's team. I just saw a document on it. The thing is, you don't. Nothing is static.
Right. No. Right.
Keeps going.
Nothing is static. And we thought history was done.
Yeah.
We thought it was over. And everybody's going to be freedom loving like us, even the Chinese. Even the Chinese. Well, that's why we engaged them. And I don't think that was necessarily crazy. I think that was worth doing. But when they figured out, you know, they're just taking our stuff to make a dictatorship more powerful. You know, it wasn't like, you know, Germany and Japan, which became republics or democracies, although Germany is now wants to ban the second largest political party because apparently it's unapproved. Gosh, how could the Germans banning other political parties go wrong?
Never seen that before.
You know, my opinion, now look, Iraq was bad. Afghanistan was a disaster.
Yeah.
But I still think the biggest foreign policy disaster of the last 40 years or 30 years was the failure to take Russia, and if not make it an ally, at least make it a compadre, bring it into the West. It was never, look, it's never going to be like one of those small towns in Texas where everybody's part of the democracy, but it didn't have to be what it is now. We alienated it. Now they're sidling up to China. Although I think Putin's smart enough to know that's a matter of the alligator eating him last.
And they never know what happened to Patton. Happened to Patton? Yeah, right at the crux of the point you're speaking, I'm going to. Yeah, what happened to him?
Well, you know, we could have we screwed that up terribly, and basically invited this. And I'm not blaming us for this war in Ukraine, because that had I went over and trained Ukrainian soldiers four times, served with them in Kosovo. There's a lot of stuff going on between Russians and Ukrainians that we can't dig.
Right.
And it's a cultural thing that goes thousands of years.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And I kind of think, you know, trying to put our paradigm on it, making this good guy, bad guy thing. And I make no mistake, you're a bad guy if you invade your neighbor because you're mad at them. I just, you know, I'm not for the Russians. I'd rather Ukrainians win. But the simplistic way we've been looking at it with the blank check. You know, there are three ways Ukraine goes. We give them enough money to win if they can find enough bodies to fight. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are enough Ukrainians to outnumber the Russians. Because remember, Russians lose first, then they come back stronger with good generals after all the bad ones get killed, and then better equipment,
the disposable
and then
troops.
They win. Yeah. But they come back better.
Right.
The Ukrainians are just a meat grinder, and you know, a good chunk of Ukraine's male population is out of Ukraine. Because apparently Ukraine is more important to Americans than it is to some Ukrainians. The next thing is we can tell Zelensky, we're going to support you, but you're going to make a peace. And that means giving up some stuff to Putin. And I know that's a hard pill to swallow, but you're going to do it. The third one, and none of these are good, but the third option is just horrible, which is we're going to keep up a meat grinder to try and run the Russians down. Which won't work because there are endless numbers of Russians.
Exactly.
But you're going to kill a lot of people and engender a lot of hatred. And you're always wearing the risk that somebody tosses a hot rock.
Right.
So, you know, naturally, our political elite has chosen the worst of all possible scenarios.
Right.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Well, listen, I'm looking at this time. We've got like minutes. Anybody want to ask Kurt? Our time's kind of rolling on us. Boy, Kurt, we love talking with you. Anybody have a question that you wanted to ask Kurt before we run out on time?
Because otherwise, I got five more in the queue here. So,
yeah, there you go.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll jump in.
I've got a question, but it'd take too long to answer. Kurt, I just want to say I enjoy reading your articles on townhall.com. Make a lot of sense. I saw a veteran in Avila Beach about 5 weeks ago. He had a T-shirt on. Said Army Vet on the front of it. Hit the back of his T-shirt said, go first, go hard, show no mercy. And then I looked down, he was wearing shorts. I looked down under, down at the bottom, and he had no legs. And I just, when I see those kind of things, my heart goes out. And, it's what you've said gives a lot of insight into things. I hope you'll come back because I really do have some questions I'd like to ask you based upon some things that you said. Yes. And things you've written, and it'd be really, really fine. So thanks for being with us tonight. That was
great. Well, I appreciate the shout out to our troops. The greatest honor of my professional life was leading American soldiers. I would sit there and go, holy cow. Did they know that they picked me to do this? But I was pretty, I enjoyed it. And it makes me very sad that right now I'm recommending people don't join our military. I still support you if you do. You say, Kurt, I'm going to do what I want. Roger that. I'm behind you 110%. I just think it's a really bad idea. And as somebody who represented briefly one of the families of one of the Marines killed in Kabul and got kind of a close look at some stuff that was pretty distressing.
Right.
You know, I don't see the general. I think we need a president who's going to go in and clean house. He's going to say, hey, if you've got a star, you're presumptively fired. Now let's talk about which ones you I keep.
Right. Boy. Boy, oh boy. Well, Stephanie, Kurt, if you stick with us for a minute, can you give us a 30-second spot there, Steph?
Sure. Are you with us?
Good deal.
We love that you guys join us each week here. You can find us on all the streaming platforms. And if you want detailed information, you can go to bbsradio.com/raising expectations. You can learn about each one of us on here. You can listen to the live show. You can listen to past recordings. You can donate on PayPal and Venmo. Yes, we have a cool QR code. We're kind of excited about it. All the details are there. And then I just wanted to remind you guys, too, that Kurt, we didn't talk about it very much, but he's actually an author. All of his books are on Amazon. I don't know if you want to plug anywhere else, Kurt, but your most recent one is Inferno, right?
It is. And I'm working on number 8 in the Kelly Turnbull People's Republic series, which are, they're action packed. I think they're funny. People love them. I've sold a lot of them. And I think people are yearning for, traditional conservative action entertainment.
Amen.
If you don't like guns, don't buy the books.
I think you're the next Tom Clancy. That's what I think. Every time
I wish. I wish.
Thank you very much. Off the God's ears.
Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks for that. And Kurt, I'll get some of that information. I'm going to start running it myself too through the week for you on what we're
terrific.
Doing.
Terrific. I appreciate it.
It'd be great. All right. Hey, folks, we're sure glad you tuned in tonight. And tell your wife, thanks for sharing you with us tonight. And we think that, in the words of Indiana Jones, she chose well. That was good. I still like that
one. Bet she's not here to hear that.
Oh, okay.
It's recorded.
It's recorded. Yeah, you can prove it. Well, all right. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. God bless you. And have your expectations range. As you know, he's in control. He's leading in your life. And pray for Kurt and the things that he does in helping encourage and strengthen people across this nation. Play for our nation, too, each and every day. And we love you and thank God for you. Have a great evening. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you, Kurt.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.